Thanks for tuning in to Next Level Church Podcast. For more information, please visit our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Good morning. Well, today we are concluding our series titled Movies, Modern Day Parables. And what we know is that Jesus, whenever he addressed the crowds, he would use a parable. And a parable is simply a story with a point. And today our movies are our modern day parables. Today's featured parable was a massive hit. It came out way back in 2001, which is mind-blowing to me because when I watch this film, it does not feel that old. That's 20 years ago, and it shocks me that this movie is that old. When the movie came out, it was a massive hit. It cost $93 million to make, but it made $897.7 million. That is a lot of money. Today's film is based off a very popular book series, which I'll go into a little bit more information in just a few moments, but without further ado, I now present to you today's parable, The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. Check it out.
It began with the forging of the great rings. Three were given to the elves, immortal, wisest, and fairest of all beings. Seven to the dwarf lords, great miners and craftsmen of the mountain halls. And nine rings were gifted to the race of men who above all else desire power. For within these rings was bound the strength and will to govern each race. But they were all of them deceived, for another ring was made. In the land of Mordor, in the fires of Mount Doom, the Dark Lord Sauron forged in secret a master ring to control all others. And into this ring he poured his cruelty, his malice, and his will to dominate all life. One ring to rule them all.
One ring to rule them all. Dun, dun, dun. If you're not into fantasy, then Lord of the Rings may not be your thing, but don't miss it. There is still an amazing parable in here. And what we just saw is that there are multiple rings that were given to the multiple creatures all throughout the film. And if you're not familiar with Lord of the Rings, it was written by a Christian named J.R. Tolkien, but it is not a Christian book series or a Christian movie. It is a book series and movie that has some Christian principles, but in order for it to be an explicitly Christian story, it has to reference Jesus. And Jesus is nowhere throughout the story. There's no mention of him. There are Christian principles. Some people have wrongly assumed that Lord of the Rings is an allegory that points us to Jesus, and that would also not be correct. One of J.R. Tolkien's best friends was a guy by the name of C.S. Lewis, and he did write an allegory called Narnia. And if you're familiar with Narnia and the children's story, there is a character in Narnia, the lion, that represents Jesus. And so it is an allegory where there are characters that reference Jesus. Lord of the Rings is just an amazing story that ends up having some Christian principles. But whether you're a Christian or not, you can relate to the things that are in the story. And I actually think that's amazing. I think as Christians, we should do the best that we possibly can in all areas. I think we need more people to write great stories and to create great films. And not just for Christian audiences, but for everyone to try to influence the world. In fact, if you're here today and you are a Christian, I would say that you are called to bring excellence in every area of your job and every area where you work. If you work at the shipyard, you need to know that you do not just represent you or your family, you represent Jesus at your job. If you are a teacher, you don't just represent yourself. You don't just work for a paycheck or... definitely don't work for a paycheck. You don't work just to influence the minds of future generations. You work for Jesus. If you are a police officer, you're not a police officer just for yourself, representing yourself. You are an officer that represents Jesus. In everything that we do as Christians, we should represent Jesus, that we are working as if we're working unto him. So that is what Tolkien does. He writes a story that is a fantasy story. It is no more Christian than Star Wars would be a Christian film, but there are ideas in Lord of the Rings that help point us to our faith. There are ideas like hope and faith and endurance that are universal truths, but actually help point us to the scripture. Now, if you're not familiar with Lord of the Rings, and you need to know, there are multiple creatures all throughout the film, and maybe the most important are the hobbits. If you're not familiar with Lord of the Rings, then you need to pay careful attention to this next scene, because it explains who the hobbits are. Check this out.
Now, where to begin? Ah, yes. Concerning hobbits. Hobbits have been living and farming in the four farthings of the Shire for many hundreds of years, quite content to ignore and be ignored by the world of the big folk. Middle Earth being, after all, full of strange creatures beyond count, hobbits must seem of little importance, being neither renowned as great warriors, nor counted among the very wise.
Frodo! Someone at the door!
In fact, it has been remarked by some that hobbits' only real passion is for food. A rather unfair observation, as we have also developed a keen interest in the brewing of ales and the smoking of pipeweed. But where our hearts truly lie is in peace and quiet and good-tilled earth. For all hobbits share a love of things that grow. And yes, no doubt to others our ways seem quaint. But today, of all days, it is brought home to me. It is no bad thing to celebrate a simple life.
So hobbits are simple creatures who are not looking for adventure. They're not looking for action. They enjoy their simple lives. They enjoy peace. They enjoy quiet. They really love food. They love drink. They love to smoke their pipes. They are very, very simple creatures. And two of the hobbits that we get to know throughout this tale is Frodo and his best friend Sam. Frodo has an adventure thrust upon him. He's not looking for adventure. He doesn't want some excitement in his life. It is literally put on him. And the adventure that he has to carry is destroying this ring. There is one ring to rule them all, and it is full of evil, and it draws people in. It plays to people's pride and their own evil. And he is given the task of destroying this ring. But in order to destroy it, he has to bring it back to where it was created, which is the fires of Mordor. This is too big of a task for Frodo to take on his own. And this is where we get to learn about a whole bunch of other creatures. This is where they form what is called the Fellowship of the Ring. It is known that Frodo cannot carry this burden on his own, that he needs friends. He needs a group of people to help carry this with him. And so they form the Fellowship, and it's all different creatures. And one of the things that I love about this is that it is actually creatures who do not get along. It is groups of people and creations that actually don't like each other, but they are forming a bond over this common purpose, which is to destroy this ring. Well, they go out to try to destroy the ring, but then there's all sorts of action that happens. And I know action's not everyone's cup of tea, so I save that for you. You can watch the movie on your own. But what you need to know is that throughout all the adventure and all of the action, Frodo ends up feeling like the burden is too big for anyone else to carry. And so he separates from the fellowship. He goes off on his own, and that sets up our next scene. Check this out.
I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened.
So do all who live to see such times, but that is not for them to decide. All you have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to you.
I made a promise, Mr. Frodo. A promise. Don't you leave him, Samwise Gamgee. And I don't mean to. I don't mean to.
Oh, Sam.
So I try my best in this movie series to not give any spoilers in case you haven't seen the film. But I do need to give a few spoilers. And I want to give a little side note about spoilers. There's an expiration date to spoilers. This movie is over 20 years old and the books are even older. So if you don't know what's going to happen, that's on you. Don't get mad at me. There is a character in the film named Gandalf. And at this point, it seems like Gandalf has passed away. It seems like he has gone on. And there's this pivotal scene in the film where Frodo feels all alone. And he just says out loud to no one, "I wish it need not have happened in my time." And I don't know about you, but that's a phrase that I think a lot of us can relate to. I wish this didn't happen to me. I didn't choose this adventure. I didn't look for this. This was put on me. And maybe it's because of some health crisis in your life or a broken relationship or something out of your control. But have you ever been in a situation where the burden felt so big and you wish it would just go away? Like, I didn't choose this. I don't want this to happen to me. Why can't it just disappear? Why can't it just leave me alone? And at that point, Gandalf speaks to him. He's not physically there. It's like an Obi-Wan Kenobi type moment where Gandalf speaks to him and Gandalf says, "So do I. And so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us." You may not have chosen the situations going on in your life. They may be out of your control. You may not get to choose it, but you can choose what you do with the situations that are handed to you. And with that advice, Frodo musters up the courage to go on this adventure alone. But then Sam, his best friend, comes out of nowhere, jumps in the water, ends up in the boat, and he says, "I made a promise. I made a promise not to leave you, and I'm going to uphold that promise." And this is where we really get the parable of the film Lord of the Rings. There are three films, there's three books, the movies are all over 3 hours. There's a lot that goes on, but the main idea of these films and the main parable is simply this: you'll only go as far as your friends can carry you. That's the big idea of the films, and it's actually the big idea for today. If you're taking notes, I would encourage you to write that down. You'll only go as far as your friends can carry you. in so many ways, the relationship that that Frodo has with Sam, it reminds me of a friendship that we learn about in the scriptures. There's a friendship between a guy by the name of David and his best friend, Jonathan. Now, if you grew up in church, you're probably very familiar with David. David was a little punk shepherd boy who brought a happy meal to a war battle. And when he shows up to the battle, there's this giant who is defying the armies of God. And none of the soldiers are willing to fight this giant. So David rises up this holy anger and says, if no one else is going to fight him, I'm going to fight this giant. And he fights a giant with a slingshot. Now, spoiler alert, he wins. And if you did not know that, that is on you. This is thousands of years old. Do not get mad at me for ruining David versus Goliath. He takes out the giant, and you might be familiar with that. But what you may not have ever heard, or maybe you've never researched, is what happens to David after that. David is brought into the presence of the king. And in the presence of the king, he meets what would become his best friend. It is the king's son named Jonathan. And this is where our theme text comes for today. At Next Level, we honor the text. We do so by standing to our feet, reading it nice and loud. So I want to invite you to stand up and read with me. 1 Samuel 20, verse 42. You'll see two dots between the 20 and the 42. We like to have a little bit of fun. We just pump our fists and say, dot, dot. You're invited to do that with us as well. Will you read it with me nice and loud? It says, Jonathan said to David, go in peace, for we have sworn friendship with each other in the name of the Lord. 1 Samuel 20, dot, dot, 42. Now that we've read the text, let's go to God in prayer. Will you pray with me? God, we come before you and we ask that you would speak to our hearts in a personal way. We all come in here with our own burdens, our own excuses, our own issues. And God, we ask that you would just speak through all of that and that you'd help us to hear from you. And God, we ask that you would give us the courage to obey whatever you tell us to do. And God, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight. Oh Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may have a seat. So friendship is an incredibly important theme to Lord of the Rings, specifically to the Fellowship of the Ring, but it's also incredibly important to us as humans. We are wired to need other people, and we are specifically wired to need friends and to have friendship. Maybe you are familiar with the following saying, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. It is a very famous phrase, and I believe in it, that if you want to see the direction of where your life is headed, look at the people closest to you. Are they making good decisions or bad decisions? Are they wise or are they foolish? If you want to know where you're headed, look at your friend group. In fact, that's very similar to the very famous quote by Jim Rohn, who says, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And I have found that quote to be true, that if you walk with wise people, you become wise. If you walk with foolish people, you become like a fool. That if you want to see the quality and direction of your life, look at your closest friends. Look at your circle of friends. Now, this is, I believe, a very important topic for everyone that's in the room. No matter what age you are, whether you're still a student or you're getting up in years, no matter what age you are, whether you're male or female, I think there is something for literally everyone from this sermon. But real quick, I want to speak to the men that are here today, because statistics show that men are the ones that have the least amount of friendship. Specifically, men, once they get into their 30s and 40s, have less friends than any other group around. In fact, it has led a lot of health professions to say the next great health crisis is going to be a lack of friendship, specifically friendships to men. Now, a lack of friendship, it does apply to all of us, that what is happening and what researchers are showing us is that the more that we are connected online, the less we are connected face-to-face. And we have acquaintances, but we don't have real friends. We have people who we say, yeah, they're my buddy, I like to hang out with them, I like to have fun with them. But when our world falls apart, very few people, statistics show, have people that are going to come to their rescue, are going to come carry them. And what we know is that research shows that people with more social connections are happier and healthier in a host of ways, such as the following. People with multiple social connections have lower blood pressure, lower body mass index, less likely to experience depression, and live up to 20% longer. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm a really big guy. I can't imagine how big I would be if I didn't have friends. Having friends lowers your body mass index. That is absolutely amazing. There are so many health benefits to having friends. But researchers recently polled the population, and they found that in America, 2.5 million men admitting to having no close friends. Don't move past that too quickly. 2.5 million men admitted to having zero close friends. And there's research. There's a reason why this happens. It really has to do with the fact that as men, we're not very great at multitasking. We focus on one or two things. And so when guys are in school, they tend to have a peer group that is really important to them. But as a guy's attention moves from his friends onto a significant other, and he gets married and then has a family, he has a very difficult time multitasking. And so his attention is on providing for his spouse, and then if he has kids, eventually providing for his kids. And because of that, he does not prioritize friendships. And so oftentimes, guys would say, yeah, I have friends. But if you really drill down and say, well, who are your friends? Who do you hang out with? They're like, oh, yeah, this guy from high school. We're still friends. Well, when was the last time you saw him? 6 years ago. When was the last time you hung out with him? 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Guys think they have friends. But when you really dig in, a lot of guys don't have good friends. In fact, research shows that social support plays a big role in your ability to handle stress, speaking specifically to men. That handling stress, a big part has to do with having friends. Citing research that a lack of non-family friends is linked to significantly higher rates of depression, anxiety, and death. In fact, one John Hopkins study found blood pressure rates improved 17% when men suffering from heart disease had the support of friends and a spouse. Don't move past that too quickly. It is important if you're married that you have a spouse, you have a good relationship, but the health benefits come from having a spouse and friends as opposed to just a spouse. Other University of Michigan research has correlated being a part of a social group to a 67% improvement in symptoms of depression. So there is a pandemic literally going on that medical professionals say that the next great medical emergency is not obesity, cancer, or heart disease. It is a lack of friendship, and it is specifically a lack of friendship to men. In fact, this has become a pretty funny stereotype. It's something you can see throughout our culture. And comedian John Mulroney actually addressed this in one of his stand-up routines. And there's a lot of truth to what he says, but it's also really funny. Check this out.
Clap if your father is between the ages of 60 and 75. Yeah. What's going on with them? What's wrong with them? They're so emotional. My dad hugs me so tightly sometimes, I'm like, is one of us about to die? And my dad has no friends. And your dad has no friends. If you think your dad has friends, you're wrong. Your mom has friends, and they have husbands. Those are not your dad's friends. Why do none of our baby boomer dads have friends? I have a few theories. One, they forgot. Two, they want to be alone. Dads want to be alone. I'm not a dad, but I observed one. And he would go into a room and he'd read about World War II. All of our dads are cramming for some World War II quiz show. And I can't wait to watch it. We're just going to change channels and see our dads win a $900,000 on Normandy trivia. Another theory I have is that dads really only care about money. But you're not allowed to talk about money in the United States. It's taboo, so they don't have anything to talk about, so they have no friends. A friend of mine once told me that he would rather his wife die than go through a divorce with her. He said that to me. Later that day, I asked him, hey, what are you making this year? And he said, that's personal. It is hard to make friends when you're an adult male. I think that's the greatest miracle of Jesus, truly, is that he was a 33-year-old man and he had 12 best friends. And they were not his wife's friends' husbands. And he didn't meet them a long time ago in school. He met them in his 30s. 12 best friends. Remember when your dad went fishing once? These guys went fishing every day. And they were all best friends. And he'd do magic tricks for them, and they loved it. He did magic tricks to the one time that he should have done magic, and then he forgot to. And they would take it. That must have been disappointing for his 12 best friends. They're taking him away in chains, and they're like, do the chain trick. He's like, I don't know how to break chains.
So it's a really funny clip, but there is a lot of truth to it, that a lot of guys don't actually have friends. They have wives who have friends who have husbands. And I don't want us to move past this too quickly, that generally speaking, women are more social creatures and women will prioritize their friends. But you may be here and you may be a woman and say, I don't have a lot of friend group. I don't have a great friend group. And I think today will apply to you. But I want to make sure that the guys listen carefully to this. that you are, just by nature of being a guy, prioritizing on other things in friendship. And there's actually, it is wreaking havoc on your health. And I want to show you what we can do about this. I want to give you some ideas on how to form godly relationships. And we're going to do that by looking at the relationship that David has with his best friend, Jonathan. Now, remember, this happens right after David defeats Goliath. He is in the presence of King Saul, and Saul brings him in to his courtroom, and this is where he meets Jonathan. In 1 Samuel 18, 1 through 4, it says, "After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt." So Jonathan makes a covenant with David. And this is really important in order to understand what a godly friendship is. David has this covenant made, and a covenant is simply, it's like a promise on steroids. Specifically, a covenant is an oath. A covenant refers to two or more parties who are bound together. Oftentimes in life, we don't have great friendships because we've lost this idea of a covenant. But if you read from the Old Testament to New, this idea of covenant is all throughout scriptures. A covenant, we hear about it when God makes a covenant with man. Specifically, God tells Noah that he's going to flood the earth and that man has become so evil, he's going to take out all of humanity, except he's going to save humanity through Noah and his family. And Noah builds a boat, a big ark. And then the animals come by twosies, twosies, and they fill the ark. And it rains for 40 days and 40 nights. And then after the rain, Noah walks off the boat and God makes a covenant with Noah. It is the covenant to never flood the entire earth again. In the New Testament, we get this idea of a covenant. It's called the New Covenant. And the New Covenant is what Jesus has done for us. That Jesus has made a promise. He's made a pledge to us that when we give our lives to him, when we become Christians, he's given us this covenant that he will not leave us or forsake us. It doesn't matter if our circumstances change. It doesn't matter what happens. We cannot out-sin the love of God. There is nothing we can do to shake the love of God. When we become a Christian, we are literally bound to Jesus, that he has made a covenant. And the truth is that you may not love yourself very much, but you cannot shake the love of God. You may not feel like you are worthy of love, but when you are a Christian, God has covenanted with you to say, "I love you. I love you, and I'm committed to you." And this is so important. It's important because so many of us don't have great friendships. And the reason that we don't have great friendships is that we don't know how to covenant with other people. We have friendships based off convenience, based off, yeah, I see some people at work, so therefore they're my friends. Or I have some people on Facebook that we're friends with. But a friendship, a true friendship, goes a lot further than that. It is a commitment that transcends all circumstances, that says, even if we move away, even if things change, even if you go through hell, I'm going to go through it with you. In fact, Simon Sinek has pointed out that specifically with millennials, there's a lot of loneliness. He has said that millennials will admit that many of their relationships are superficial. They will admit that they don't count on their friends. They don't rely on their friends. They have fun with their friends, but they also know that their friends will cancel on them when something better comes along. Deep, meaningful relationships are not there because they never practice the skill set, and worse, they don't have coping mechanisms to deal with stress. So when significant stress begins to show up in their lives, they're not turning to a person. They're turning to a device. They're turning to social media. They're turning to these things which offer temporary relief. And so what we're seeing is that people, especially as they get older, they aren't turning to one another, that a lot of their problems aren't being solved because when they feel stress, they're going to quick, easy fixes. And social media has been the quick, easy fix. And so oftentimes in our brains, we think, yes, I have friends because I have followers on social media. But when your world falls apart, it's not the masses on social media that are going to be there for you. It is real life friends who are part of your life, who care about you. And what we see in Jonathan and David is that Jonathan made a covenant with David. If you're taking notes, which I encourage you to do, I want to give you some requirements for godly friendships. And number one, godly friendships require great commitment. Godly friendships require great commitment. We don't have great friendships because we don't like to commit to people. And in the quote by Simon Sinek, we see that we have friends, but friends are constantly saying, yeah, I'll like you until something better comes along. That's not true friendship. Friendship is, I'm going to prioritize. I'm committed to you. I am your ride or die. I don't have friends. I have family. Fast and the Furious. Just, that's how my brain works. It works in movie quotes. But so often in life, it's so true that we don't have great, meaningful friendships because we don't know how to be committed to one another. And I want to encourage you and challenge you that before you point the finger at anyone in your life and say, hey, you're not a great friend, I want to challenge you to learn to be a great friend. And being a great friend starts with having a commitment. In the film Lord of the Rings, we see that Sam made a promise, and Sam's promise was not going to be broken no matter what the circumstances happened, no matter what was going on. Sam said, I made a promise to be with you. And I just want to just ask you, how different would your life be if you had someone in your life that was so committed to you that no matter what happened, no matter what circumstances you went through, no matter what crazy ideas you had, they said, I am here for you. And how different would someone else's life be if you were that friend to them? Well, let's pick back up with our text, because Jonathan makes this covenant with David, and then the poo hits the fan. Saul was a king, and Saul was cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, and he became jealous of David, and he tries to kill him. And this is where our text picks up in 1 Samuel 19, 1 through 7. It says, Saul told his son Jonathan and all the attendants to kill David, but Jonathan had taken a great liking to David and warned him. My father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I will go out and stand with my father in the field where you are. I'll speak to him about you and will tell you what I find out. So because Jonathan made a covenant with David, he said, hey, my dad's trying to kill you, but I'm going to fill out this situation. I'll talk to my dad tomorrow and I'll let you know what he says. Look at what it says next. Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, let not the king do wrong to his servant David. He has not wronged you, and what he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life in his hands, and when he killed the Philistine, the Lord won a great victory for all Israel, and you saw it and were glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason? Saul listened to Jonathan and took this oath. As surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death. So Jonathan called David and told him the whole conversation. He brought him to Saul, and David was with Saul as before. So this takes us to the second thing that godly friendship requires. Number one, godly friendship requires a great commitment. But number two, it requires loyalty. Loyalty. Jonathan, when he is faced with his dad and his dad starts to talk bad about David, Jonathan actually comes to David's defense. Think about how difficult that would be. Not only is it his dad, it's also the king. If you disagree with the king could kill you. But Jonathan made a covenant, he made an oath, and he said, I'm going to be loyal to my friend. Now, I just want to just get you to think about something. If you want to know how loyal your friends are, listen to how they talk to you about other mutual friends that you have. If you have friends that come to you and gossip about the other people in your life, can I just tell you they're also gossiping about you? And if you are a person who gossips to your friends, you are not being a loyal friend. A loyal friend is someone that no matter what the circumstances happen, they defend the friendship. When the friend isn't there, they come to their defense. And if the friend is in the wrong, they go to them and they address it. They don't talk bad behind their back. And what would happen? How more secure would your life feel if when the poo hits the fan in your life, people aren't talking bad behind your back? How more supportive would you be if you knew when your friends got together, if someone tried to throw you under the bus, someone else would speak up and say, no, don't do that. They're not here. This is a good friend to us. We're not going to talk bad about them. We're not going to gossip about them. We're not going to throw them under the bus. We're going to defend them. We love them. And if they are in the wrong, let's go to them and talk to them. Why? Because good friends, godly friends, are loyal. And again, before you point the finger and leave from here and say, you know what, you're not a loyal friend, I'm done with you, I want to challenge you, are you being a loyal friend to your friends? Are you the type of person that your friends know that they can count on you? That when they're not around, you're going to uplift them and not talk bad behind their back? Let's see what happens next in the text, 1 Samuel 20, 16 through 17. It says, so Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, may the Lord call David's enemies to account. And Jonathan had David reaffirm his oath out of love for him, because he loved him as he loved himself. So all throughout the text, what we see is that Jonathan continues to reaffirm this oath. It's not a one-time oath. He reminds David of it. Hey, I'm committed to you through thick and thin. In fact, in here, if you look at the specific, the original language in Hebrew, what Jonathan says to David is, when the sun shines, we'll shine together. Told you I'll be here forever. Said I'll always be your friend. Took an oath, I'm going to stick it out till the end. Now it's raining more than ever. Know that we'll still have each other. You can stand under my umbrella. You can stand under my umbrella. Ella, Ella, A. But did you ever notice in that song, if you're not familiar, it's a popular song from a handful of years ago. But did you ever notice in that song, it says, I took an oath and I'll stick it out till the end. Are we missing that in our own friendships? Where there's this friendship that says, hey, I took an oath and I want to remind you, I'm your ride or die. I took an oath. I committed to you. You can't scare me. You can't shake me off. I'm committed to you. And then the text says that Jonathan loved David as he loved himself. And that takes us to number three. Godly friendships require sacrificial love. Godly friendships require sacrificial love. One of the reasons that we don't have better friendships is that we're not willing to sacrifice for them. In order to have great friendships, it's going to cost you something. In fact, Scripture tells us that Jesus modeled this for us, that Jesus laid down his life for his friends. He modeled perfect love by sacrificing something. And in order to have great friendships, we have to sacrifice something. It may be our time. We may have to sacrifice some alone time to prioritize some other people. We may have to sacrifice our schedules and say, hey, you know what? It's going to be worth the sacrifice to spend time with my friends, to prioritize them. Maybe the sacrifice is simply prioritizing. Something that I try to do and I would encourage you to do is literally put reminders on your calendar to invest in your friends. What would happen if you just had a reminder that came up once a week to check in on your friends? Hey, how are you doing? I thought of you this week. What would happen if we were intentional? It may sacrifice. It may cost you some time. It may cost you a little bit of effort. But great friendships are worth it. And Jonathan reaffirms his commitment to David. And then he tells him, I'm going to love you like I love myself. That is true sacrifice. Well, let's keep reading. See what happens next. 1 Samuel 20, verse 42. Jonathan said to David, go in peace, for we have sworn friendship with each other in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord is witness between you and me, and between your descendants and my descendants forever. Then David left, and Jonathan went back to the town. So what happens here is that, again, they're talking about this covenant, and what the covenant is between them is not just for their friendship, but it's for their entire families, for the rest of their lives. Now, if you were here last week, you heard about and learned about Jonathan's son, Mephibosheth. You remember that, if you were here last week? The reason that David takes Mephibosheth into his house is because of the covenant he made with Jonathan, that he made a promise to him that I will love you and your entire family for the rest of my life. It is a bond that is not separated by circumstances. And it is a bond that they made, not just between the two of them, but they made it before God. This may seem self-explanatory, but it is so important to having godly friendships. Number four is godly friendships require God. So if you're taking notes, godly friendships require great commitment. They require a covenant. They require loyalty. They require sacrificial love. But number four, they require God. Now, you may be here today and say that you have some good friends, but I want to ask you, do you have godly friends? Because a godly friend is going to be there for you, but at the same time, they're going to encourage you in your relationship with God. And if that quote that I read earlier is true, that you are the average of the five people closest to you, I just want to ask, are the five people closest to you, are they pursuing God? And I want you to examine your own life. Are you the friend in your friend circle that is pursuing God? Godly friendships are so incredibly important. And the reason that they are important is because relationships are difficult, and it is hard to love someone when they are not on their best behavior if we have not received the love of Jesus. When you receive the love of Jesus, you understand and realize that God loves me even at my worst, and I can't shake him because the covenant that Jesus made for me. I can't shake the love of God. I've disobeyed him. I've acted like I didn't know him. I haven't prioritized him. And yet I still cannot shake the love of God. When you embrace that and you understand that, it then causes you to share that love with other people. And I am convinced that true friendships involve God. Because it's really hard to be sacrificial when you've never received that sacrifice on your own. And this is so incredibly important to the story of Lord of the Rings. And there are three films, and I want to fast forward just real quick. Mild spoiler alert. At the end of the third film, we see this idea of friendship carry all the way throughout. And one of the most famous lines from the entire film is when Frodo comes to this realization that I can't go on. I'm just too tired, and I cannot carry this anymore. And Sam says to him, "Come, Mr. Frodo," he cried. "I can't carry it for you, but I can carry you." It's an amazing scene in the film where Sam, because of his covenant relationship with Frodo, says, "I cannot carry that ring. I can't touch that ring. I can't take the burden from you, but I can carry you. I can carry you." At some point in your life, you will go through a burden, and I hate it. I hate that this world is so broken that we all go through brokenness. But at some point, you will carry something that is too big for you. And at that point, you are going to wish that you had friends, and your friends will not be able to take the burden away from you. If it's cancer or a broken relationship, or if it's a broken heart or it's depression, friends can't remove that burden from you, but they can carry you in times of need. And you can be the type of friends who carries other people in their time of need. That's why our big idea is you'll only go as far as your friends can carry you. You'll only go as far. If you want to improve your life, look at your friend circle. If you want to make it through the difficulties of this world, look at your friend circle, specifically your godly friends. And that takes us to today's win. Today's win's what we do with all this. And it's two questions that I want you to answer, rhetorical questions. Number one is, do you have godly friendships? Do you have them? You know what a great place to start to find godly friendships is? Within the church. But you got to have some effort. You can't just hope. Like, I don't know anyone that sets up a booth that says, "Hey, come be my friend. Applications can apply here." Like, friendships happen when you put forth effort. You've got to put yourself out there. You've got to say, "Hey, do you want to hang out? Do you want to, let's see if we can form this friendship." And then it involves having a covenant, saying, "Hey, we're gonna ride or die." Do you have godly friendships? The second question I think is equally important. Are you a godly friend? We all want great friendships, but are you the type of friend that you want? Are you the type of friend that sacrifices and prioritizes other people? Are you the type of friend that's pursuing God? Are you the type of friend that is a ride or die? Are you a godly friend? Will you go to God in prayer with me? God, we come before you and we just thank you that you give us the model of friendship, that you sacrificed your life for us, that you made a covenant for us, that you prioritize us. And we ask in Jesus' name that you would help us to be great friends. And right now, God, I ask that you would give us the opportunities to form great friends, that no matter what circumstances come our way, that we would know that there's people who have our back. There's people who support us and help point us to you. And I ask that you'd help us to be godly friends. And we ask this in Jesus' amazing name. Amen.
We hope you've enjoyed today's sermon. If you would like to hear more, please visit our website at nextlevelchurch.net. You can also follow us on social media at Next Level 757. Join us next time.